Bear Nation, how we doing? This is your host, Rob Napoli, and you are tuning in to another episode of the Bear Necessities Podcast, a podcast where we sit down with entrepreneurs, ecosystem partners, and innovation folks to talk about what it takes to launch, create, and scale businesses across the world.
How we doing, Bear Nation? It's your host, Rob Napoli, back again. This is our 101st episode. If you would ask me, did I ever think we'd get to 100? Probably not. So I'm excited to be sharing with you episode 101. And I have a really amazing founder on with me today. And this is probably what maybe a year plus in,
like a in year the and happening. A half.
Yeah. When I asked you to be on the pod to finally getting our schedules to align. And to be fair, the business is to align with a lot of the stuff that you're going through. So Maeve, as the founder of Iambic, and I can't wait to talk about your story, but Maeve, say hello to Bear Nation for us.
Thanks for having me, Rob. Just excited to be here. I love your podcast, by the way. They're really helpful. Actually, I don't know if this is going to be as helpful as your other ones, but I hope so. So
I think so. I think there's a lot of really amazing things that we're going to cover today. You know, our pre-show talk went on for a lot longer than we expected, but it's always fun to kind of chop it up. It's been a while. So, but to give the listeners a little bit of background. So after returning over 300 pairs of shoes in like 3 years, did a poor shoe fit. You had this idea to become kind of an unlikely fashion founder, right? It's a software, originally was a software, now turned shoe brand, creating the world's first precision fit sizeless sneaker by combining science, AI, advanced manufacturing, and backing from the U.S. National Science Foundation. Iambic has effectively scaled the 200-year-old craft of bespoke shoemaking with groundbreaking sneaker to make shoe sizes shoe inclusive. And if I'm not mistaken, in the background there are some of the early versions. Yeah. Of what Iambic looks like. So, you know, I love that you say the kind of unlikely fashion founder, right? So talk me through this. You know, before the days of being an entrepreneur, what were you doing before? Like, you know, you say you're an unlikely fashion founder. So what was the unlikely part? I mean, where did this whole journey start for you?
Okay. Well, if you were to talk to any of my friends who knew me when I first moved to New York, and you were to tell any of them back then that I would be at the helm of a fashion brand, I think they would laugh really hard in your face. 'Cause I was definitely not the most fashion conscious girl in New York. Started off my career as a Bain consultant, and there are far more fashionable women in the office than I. And I was just someone who said, you know what? I don't want to focus too much on how I look. I'd rather have people focus on the substance of my conversation and my character. And I had a roommate who worked at Condé Nast. We literally had like a whole debate our first night moving in about why I didn't think that fashion was worth focusing on just as a woman. So, you know, like 10, 12 years later, we're in a very different place now. But that was just my starting point. So that I just want to kind of level set there. Definitely, if you'd known me back then, just a very different person now talking to you.
Well, and it's funny because, you know, you know, early days, Harvard grad, went into consulting. There's a lot of cool things that you can do with consulting and getting to work, but coming out of Harvard, having a consulting degree, probably doing very well, then you decide to like 360 to be an entrepreneur and like bootstrap a company and get into this whole journey that we're about to talk about. Like, what was it that made you say, you know what, this isn't enough for me? Like, what was there? An event, yeah. a movement, a feeling, like what happened that just made you like give up being a consultant, living in New York, to start a company?
So I think it actually happened in two stages. There was like the 180 and then there was the full 360 sort of. And so when I was at Bain, I was just so grateful to have had the opportunity to start at such like such an incredibly well-run company with incredible culture. And I just recall distinctly realizing quite early that my disposition wasn't really well suited to it. I think in my first PD chat or professional development chat, one of the pieces of feedback that I received, maybe this was like a few weeks or a month into the job, was that I was far too expressive. They're like, Maeve, your face communicates far too much. And I was like, okay, all right. Well, you know, we're talking about development here. Do you have any tools or tricks? And nothing. No one could give me any advice. And I was like, is this a character flaw? What is this? And I actually really loved a lot of the work. But my problem was that I could never tell anyone about it. You can't talk about your work as a consultant. You can't share it with the world. Like, I'm working with this incredibly massive company that's making these cool changes, and I'm so excited about what I'm doing, but I can't tell you any details. So that kind of killed me a little bit. And then after about a year and a half in, I started hearing this refrain, Maeve, you know, I think you'd be a really good entrepreneur. And I actually had no idea what they were talking about. Because I was like, I don't know, you know, I just want to get stuff done. And sometimes if we need to get time on the client's calendar, I just kind of run into their office, ask for 5 minutes, really mean to get 30 and get 35. But I just kind of felt comfortable just trying to get things done in a scrappier way without as many emails and calendar invitations. So that was my life at Bain. And I found this incredible opportunity to join Delos and lead their ventures team, which was a combination of corporate development. And I really started moving that team more towards homegrown product development. And we invested and collaborated on products in data analytics, wearables technologies, digital content, and really kind of built my love around digital health fare. And so that was when this was like an early to mid-stage startup at the time. And I just loved the vibe. Like, I was like, I could see myself here forever. It's just incredible what impact you can have, what could be done. But I think the issue for me was that I wanted more skin in the game. And I was like, if it's a win, I want a real stake in that win. And if it's a loss or a failure, like, I'm okay with bearing that. But I just wanted more of a stake in the things that I was building, which I was so excited about. Like, I would go into the office Saturdays, Sundays, then people would walk on the top floor and they'd see, it's like Beautiful Mind, where you have like all of this like dry eraser marker around like every single, like, you know, window, clear glass, covering every single conference room. And they're like, that was Maeve. She was here this weekend. And I loved it. But I was like, you know, I think it might be time to try something on my own.
I love it. You know, it's funny because, you know, having worked as a consultant for the last few years, you know, I can talk more about some of the projects I'm working on, but like either people don't really understand it or you can't talk about it in a way where it's like, it's your work, right? Like, it's that company did this and I was on that. But people don't see like, oh, well, you did that. And it's like, you know, you lose the tangibility of building something. And that's actually one of the hardest things for me as a consultant is that I build cool shit, but it's never tied back to my name. And I never get to see it launch. I never get to see it flourish. I never get to see it grow or help it grow. It's like, yeah, I did that. And they took it and made it their own. It's just like, okay, what's next? And like, there's something to that. So I totally get it as somebody who's you know, in that stage of my career. And I love how, you know, the ability to go to Bain and, you know, to Delos Ventures, right? From Bain to Delos Ventures to see all these startups also kind of give you a firsthand view of learning by doing in a little bit less risk environment, even though you were looking at the investment side before you finally jumped all in and was like, screw it, let's go. Let's build something cool. Yeah. I also just want to point out and laugh at that, you know, somebody who teaches this and coaches this and does workshops, you know, 95% of communication is nonverbal, so I totally get it. But to tell somebody they have a poor disposition and their face gets torched away and not have any sort of like tools and tips and tricks is quite hilarious to me. But also tells me why, you know, I think it's why it makes you a great founder, as we were talking beforehand about authenticity, right? Being authentically you, bringing you every day, showing up every day. Entrepreneurship isn't for everybody, right? And you have to be able to show up, wins and losses. You made that comment, and own it. And I think a lot of people love to stand up for the wins. Very few people want to stand up for the losses. And when you work at a bigger company or bigger environment, you can kind of weather that storm. There's always another reason or something. But when you're an entrepreneur, when you're a small business owner, you ain't got shit to stand on but your own 2 feet. And I think that's very impactful that you brought that up. And I just wanted to highlight that because that kind of sets the stage, right? You know, we met about 18 months ago, 16 months ago at through a friend of the show. In fact, I've had Alex Batdorf on not once, but twice on the show. Get Shit Done Accelerator. You got to go through that experience, and through that experience, learned a lot about what you were building. So let's talk about that. Why did you join the accelerator? You had an idea to launch a company. You knew that digital health was something exciting, and you wanted to build software for shoes, and you started doing these accelerators. What was, like, walk me through kind of like frame of reference, or why software, shoes, and all this kind of timed up in that time and space?
Yeah. I think we have to go back to earliest days. And I think you already mentioned that for me, I was just someone who really struggled with shoe fit. And my breaking point was the 300 returns in 3 years, which every time I hear that and mention that, it's such a core part of our story, but I cringe because I know the economics of it. Like, I know what the environmental impact of those returns and exchanges were. I know the cost to these incredible retailers and brands I'm so grateful for who had such amazing customer service. Just want to put a shout out. Nordstrom, thank you so much. Zappos, please don't blacklist me. I purchase other products off your platforms. But I think for me, really looking at it through the lens of where I came from, which was kind of the data analytics, wearables, digital health lens. And my original hypothesis was that footwear fit was a data matching issue. And the reason for that was because I went to every single specialty shoe store. I traveled like deep Jersey, like upstate Connecticut for one of the locations. They had the most like expensive, high-end foot scanners, gait analyses out there, and all I wanted to do was just find shoes that fit me that didn't look like clown shoes. It was not like a tall order, honestly, you know? But what they didn't have was they didn't have product data to actually match with me once they had all of this high resolution data on me. And so I was like, okay, if we could create a data matching tool that could pull high resolution data from a consumer grade device, like everyone's smartphone. They wouldn't have to go to places like deep Jersey or upstate, right? And if we could get high resolution product data by working directly with those retailers and brands, then we could utilize a combination of 3D modeling and material science to match the two. And I felt really comfortable with the 3D modeling piece because growing up, my dad was actually a software developer and aerospace engineer. So he developed his own CAD software in the 90s for like aerospace parts. And it was just so cool seeing it. I was like, this stuff is possible. I know this technology exists. Okay. So I was like, it can't be that hard. And I got some incredible people on board. So I submitted this pitch to the National Science Foundation because you have to be invited to actually submit a full proposal for the grant. The pitch was accepted. They invited us to submit a proposal. We had 12 months from that date. And so we were invited, I think, like January 2020. My CTO and co-founder, Raza, he joined the day Governor Cuomo shut down New York State. I met him like one time in person before working for years without seeing him again in person. We recruited the number one foot and footwear researcher in the world, who's based in Melbourne, Australia. And when I first connected with him in January, he was like, how am I going to help you from Melbourne? And then come March, he was like, I can help you from Melbourne because everyone else is doing this from wherever. And then we just brought on board this incredible team, folks from data science backgrounds, material science backgrounds, computational biomechanics, 3D modeling, like you name it. And we got together, We got this NSF grant. We built this foot scanner. By mid-2021, we are so excited. We are testing this out on shoes, in sneakers, hiking shoes, dress shoes. And lo and behold, we discover it is not a data matching issue. It is a lot deeper than that. We found some major quality control issues, and there could be discrepancies between 3 to 20 millimeters between the product design files that we were being given and the final physical products that we received. Because we were government, because we are government funded, we had to actually test the accuracy of our fit predictions down to the millimeter. And that was why some of these brands were really excited to work with us. They're like, no other fit prediction tool has ever offered to test the exact millimeter level precision and accuracy of their tool. And I was like, that's shocking, but that makes a lot of sense because none of it's right. And
when you're mass producing at scale, that can also cause some issues, right? So it's interesting. Well, it's interesting that we've gone this long without doing this. Granted, technology hasn't always existed, but it has. Right. I've worked with a couple fashion companies out of Taiwan that has a really cool scanner for being able to scan in like clothes and then you can build an avatar of your body type and see how it fits. So you don't have to go in a changing room with all the lights, which are all meant to like make it look better than at home. Right. And I remember when they were bringing that here to New York and we were talking and I was doing some work with them, how difficult it was because even though you knew what you're putting in and the things you're getting, so many things were like not, there were so many small, subtle differences that you wouldn't know until you like put all this in that that you realize. Is it because of a mass production line? And I don't know, like that's why I'm asking you, is it because mass production? Is it because there's just issues in mass, because they're doing it, they're like, oh, it's good enough? Or why would there be so many kind of issues in the millimeter, like in those kind of small specific details that make a difference?
So that was a question that we posed. It's like, what is actually driving this discrepancy? And we were being put in touch with the material suppliers, the last makers. Last are actually the shoe molds, those molds that shoes are designed and built on. We were being put in touch with the factories. And no one would take accountability for these discrepancies. No one would be able to explain them. And for us, putting a lot of these pieces together, we realized that it was because of just how fragmented and antiquated this incredibly large, complex global supply chain is. And when it comes to clothing, the way that a fabric drapes is really nuanced. And so simulating that, especially on different people's contours, right, can be really challenging. For shoes, it's very different because it's about the interior cavity of a shoe. And it's also about not just a 3D shape, but also how it moves with you. That's what determines true fit. So with this complex global supply chain, you need complete alignment down to like millimeters, well, technically under 4 millimeters, right? Because that's like a half size, in order for a fit prediction tool to work. And so we calculated it. If we were to stay a foot scanner and data analytics platform, just focus on the software, it could take us up to 10 years to have the necessary integrations with all of the different stakeholders along these supply chains in order to finally impact the physical shoes that you, Rob, or I, Maeve, would put on our feet. So it was a while. It's like, do we have 10 years? Technically, yes. Do we want to spend it doing this? Maybe not. And so it's like, okay, well, if we really want to get people shoes that are their best fit, especially the people who want this the most, then we might have to do it ourselves. And we might have to start at that individual level because shoes are actually optimized to fit only 33% of people. And they really exclude about 27% of people who really deviate from standard sizing. And they leave this fat 40% in between. And we were like, it's that 27%. I call it the silent major minority. And It's people who don't always feel comfortable talking about shoe fit issues, but really struggled, like myself.
And that's really interesting too, because my next question was going to be like, how niche is this, or how at scale, and 27% of the market's quite fucking large, right?
Yeah.
And I even think about, like, depending on the shoe, I could wear a 10, 10 and a half or 11, but I also know what shoes fit me really, really good. And I'll buy like five of those, and which ones I'm like, I'll never buy that pair again. Right. Like, I think just as humans, there's a lot of things that we just accept, especially with footwear, because we're on our feet all day. And I don't think, and I think a lot of people, if you talk, for full transparency, my listeners have probably heard me say this, but I used to sell shoes. I worked at Finish Line for 2.5 years in college, sold shoes. And I remember the day when I actually put on a pair of shoes that fit perfectly and was like, holy fucking shit, what have I been doing my whole life? Like, the difference it made. And I used to have to wear insoles as a kid because I had like would cramp, my feet would cramp up, all those kind of things, right? It's crazy. If you're out there thinking like, why is this important? When you actually put a pair of shoes on that fit right, and you walk around, you feel like you're walking on air all day, that's what you should feel like, right? We just accept, I think, that like it's not always going to be comfortable, and our dogs are barking, and we just like let it go. And I feel like it's amazing that we're at a place in time where that could change, right?
Yeah.
So I really want to kind of get into, there's this moment right here of we got to make it ourselves, right? So this is kind of that pivotal point of, we are kind of moving away from being a software data company to now a fashion company.
Yeah.
What was that like? What was the conversation? Take us a little bit behind the scenes. You're kind of doing that right there at the end. What was the inside Maeve in the team's mind of, are we doing this? Is this where really we're going to go? Are we scared? What was that like?
We were really terrified, because we knew that going from B2B software towards consumer brand with a physical good, where the supply chain can be really complex, especially if it requires innovation to deliver what we want to deliver, it's a whole host of different skills and mindsets. None of us had ever really built a brand from scratch before. I'm a nerd who's a workaholic. I live under a rock, you know, like, and I was like, I don't know if this is something that I am really well equipped to do. But it was actually very much the support of a close friend and mentor. His name was Tyson Park, who was a champion of mine, whom I met at my days at Delos. And he was one of the people who was like, Maeve, you can go bigger. And he really instilled so much confidence in just me as an entrepreneur, because he was one of the people who encouraged me to take that risk and that leap and do something on my own. So he was always kind of back there as a supporter of mine. And when I was at this stage, he was like, Maeve, I think there's something definitely here. And he put us in touch with some incredible people. This industrial designer whose career, Coleman Horne's career, literally inspired a Cameron Crowe film where he was played by Orlando Bloom back in the day when Orlando was a hot commodity. I'm sure he still is if he is. Kind of, yeah, you know. Don't know what work he's doing these days. But
he just did Carnival Row. He's had 2 seasons on Amazon, so.
I live under a rock. See?
Yeah. Well, and yeah. Katy Perry mentioned him in the news recently on a Twitch live stream. I won't get into that topic, but you know, so he's still very relevant.
Oh, excellent. Okay. I'm glad. I'm very happy about that. And a lot of these introductions that he made really allowed us to find the right designers, find the right partners in our supply chain, to really get this off the ground. And without those introductions, without really kind of like boosting our team and really instilling confidence in just us as a team and then our vision, I don't think we would have been able to have the guts to do it. We were really scared. And going back to NSF and saying, hey, thank you so much for this grant, but we now want to pivot from personalized recommendations to personalized product. And the technology here is like very different in terms of what we need to make it happen. We had to effectively reapply to just keep the funds that we'd been given. and make a really strong case for it, because it's this taxpayer dollars. You know, there's a huge social benefit here. Social impact's really big when it comes to these grants, as well as the opportunity, right? Market opportunity. So going out there, having to convince the US government to build your own brand, it's just really different than, you know, a B2B software company.
Well, I think there's a couple of things there. I think one, B2B software is more scalable. So of course, you know, they're more excited about that. Two, you know, I think that what you're doing has huge implications. If you get it right on your own product, like the scalability of that, you now have a bunch of testing data that you can leverage, right?
Yeah.
But it is scary because you're going into a time and place where we're looking at 2023. Capital is not as easily to be accessed right now, especially if you are a product company with a global supply chain. I was helping a company fundraise that was a wearable device and hardware software combo pack, and everyone's like, well, the hardware, the supply chain, where are you getting out of? We're like, here and here. They're like, China, no. Turkey, yes. Georgia, blah, blah. And like, nah, we're still not going to touch it. We don't trust hardware and products right now. And it's like, so that's a really big leap. So it's amazing that you had somebody like Tyson in your corner to do that. I think for those that listen to this podcast, for entrepreneurs out there, every one of you, almost every entrepreneur I talk to has that internal drive, right? But there's always somebody in their corner, right? Yeah. And I think it's important that, you know, as entrepreneurs, they say like, you gotta be crazy. Everyone's gonna call you crazy. Don't listen to them. But everyone who had a crazy idea has that one motherfucker in their corner that helps push them off the ledge, so to speak, to take that leap and go. And it's really cool that Tyson was able to do that. And not just give you that support, but the introductions and leveraging the power of his network and really opening those doors that kind of puts you where you are today, in a way that you probably didn't expect. Right. And I appreciate you sharing that. If it wasn't for him, probably would never happened. And that's scary to say, but it's also awesome because that means all these things that are happening are just new doors being opened that are going to just turn into great things.
Yeah, I think with Tyson, it's bittersweet. So we started this pivot fall 2021, and we really went all in setting up our supply chain early 2022. And we are ready to finally start our branding and really think a little bit more deeply about our marketing strategy and a few other things that had kind of fallen to the wayside as we were just under the hood trying to get something that could work. And he was like, Maeve, I got you. I've got this. I am in touch with just culture and I know people and I'm hip and I'm cool and I'm a tastemaker. He didn't say those things, but it was very much there. We all knew it. He didn't have to say it. And I've got this. But he passed away quite suddenly last August. Thank you. It was really hard because he was a friend and a mentor who was just someone who was always in my corner. And it was really hard losing someone who was such a strong champion of this new vision that many of us were just really nervous and terrified, but finally getting comfortable embracing. And when someone tells you, Maeve, I've got this, and this is the type of person, he would fly from LA to New York, drop of a dime. If I said, Tyson, I need you here tomorrow for this meeting, he would do it. He was that type of person. So when he said it, it meant something. And not everyone says, I got you, and really mean it. Talk is cheap. And he was not one of those people. So when he passed away, it was the day after I'd flown back from Portugal, which is where we are setting up our supply chain, which is where we're manufacturing. He couldn't get his passport renewed on time to join me on that trip. But he was like, Maeve, you've got this. And I was like, okay, I got this, right. And we were going to chat the day after I got back, just kind of recap next steps, that sort of thing. He was going to come. He was going to meet my partner in New York City. Like, it was just so exciting. And I get a call from his sister telling me that he just passed away, and that was why he didn't respond to any of my texts or calls over the weekend. And it was a really big shock. He was someone who really set the whole strategy up for us. And at that point, I think I was just like, the show must go on. So I found this incredible branding agency I'd already been in touch with who really understood the iambic vision, the Working Assembly. They're just premier, terrific, so grateful. But when we were going through that whole branding work that we started in September, it felt like I was just grieving, because you have to define your visual and verbal identity. And I was literally going through, hundreds of pages of notes of my conversations with Tyson about the vision and a lot of his vision for the company, and trying to bring that to the work. And it was really hard, but I think what came out of it was something I'm pretty excited about, but it was really sad trying to bring to life something that I really wish he'd been there to like help with, but also to just realize this vision he was such a big part of creating.
Especially since he was such a big part of not only that vision, but the decision to move forward, right? Without him. And I do think is, and for me, it was out there, we have our own ways to grieve and everyone grieves differently. I think it's really important that you took the time to grieve and took the time to also put his flair, his essence, his, you know, he seems like he has a big personality, you know, the way you tell stories of him, and putting that into the brand, it's pretty awesome. And it's I think the way to remember him and to leave his lasting legacy and impression on the company is to infuse the brand with a bit of him in it.
Yeah.
But I also think, you know, that there is something that was able to come out of you, and the fact that when you passed off and he was like, I got you, I'll take on the branding stuff, and then you have to come back into that, I think it really also helped you to take what he had, but also infusing a bit of you into that brand to kind of create something that you can honor him by, but also you can lead, right?
Yes.
And you can own. And I think that's really hard, because, you know, we coach entrepreneurs to, you know, not be in control of everything all the time, and for you to give something up and then bring it back and then infuse it and now pass it off again as a lesson, I think that's going to help scale, set you up for scalability and things that you're going to run into down the road. And as those are the hard fucking lessons that people don't talk about, right? Not only did you lose one of your biggest champions and head of brand, you lost a friend, a mentor, a colleague, a confidant, and then you had to turn around and launch a big branding campaign to launch the company because you had goals and things that had to happen, and the show must go on. And all those things are the things that happen. You know, life happens, and we forget that life happens sometimes in this entrepreneurial world we live in, where we talk about all these, my challenge was this and I overcame it and now I'm successful, right? Versus like, nah, shit's hard and we're still not over it. Like, there's things that are going to hurt us for a long time.
Yeah.
But it's how we leverage that. And it's how we, you know, we started the show off talking about you wanted skin in the game, take responsibility for the successes and failures. And this isn't either a success or a failure yet, right? I think it's going to be a huge success when it comes out. But I think they're in between successes and failures or challenges. And the fact that you can get hit with a challenge, get knocked down and get back up and keep moving forward towards the vision of the company, the impact, the global impact that you saw, what, 2019, 2020, when you launched this company. So I think it's amazing. And I just waxed poetic there for a minute, but I appreciate you sharing that story and sharing it. And, you know, sorry for your loss. And I know we've talked about it a couple of times, and it's, doesn't get any easier, especially as you're seeing all the work that he put in come to fruition. And I think, you know, I for the listeners who will see it soon, I've had a little bit of a background, you know, little peek behind the curtain. I haven't seen everything, but just from what I've seen, I'm pretty sure it's going to be absolutely amazing and a great way to honor him and honor the vision of iambic and everybody that's been involved from day one to going from something really scary and having a grant from the National Science Foundation to like, holy shit, we're not a data company anymore. We're a fashion brand. Yeah. What the fuck are we doing?
Yeah. Yeah. We're also going to be dedicating our first brand video to Tyson, which will most likely be out by the time this reaches the world. And we're naming our first style the Model T, because he was someone who was a big car enthusiast. So he educated me a lot more about cars than I needed to know, as someone who hates driving and deliberately gave up her driver's license like 15 years ago. So I'm really proud of where the team is. I'm really proud of how we continue to push on. And I'm also just really grateful, because even though he was one of my biggest champions, Iambic was never built in a vacuum. I noticed one of your questions, Rob, earlier, as I was thinking about this podcast, was what's one thing what's one misconception about entrepreneurship? Is that right? Right. I think I'm remembering. And I often hear this refrain that entrepreneurship is really lonely. But I actually have never felt that way. I've actually felt more connected to people and the world and friends and family more so now than ever before. And when friends come in back to New York, those who moved, because many of them moved, and they're like, Maeve, you just seem more at ease and you just seem more open. And I'm like, because I'm doing something that I love that I can talk to everybody I love about. And everyone wears shoes, and it's just something that can really touch people's lives in such a deep, meaningful way. And people are excited about what we're doing, which I'm just so grateful for. So I haven't felt lonely in this journey at all, really. And it's a lot of other people who've really stepped in to really help kind of usher Iambic into this new stage with just as much energy as we had when Tyson was around. So.
Well, I love that. And yeah, you know, I always, for my listeners out there, I send like a questionnaire to prep, and it's like, what's one hot take or misconception or something that's contrary to popular opinion? What's your superpower and what advice you would give? And the idea behind that is I always like to get your brain thinking about entrepreneurship in a different way, right? Because we hear so much about entrepreneurship, and I love that you shared that entrepreneurship isn't lonely, because I know a lot of people that find it lonely, but I think the difference between those that find it lonely and those don't is the fact that you have to, like, and I know that the way that you're even saying this and the way you've talked about this whole experience is that as a founder, you either isolate yourself or not. Like, you have to be the one to draw into your community. You have to reach out. You have to call on those people. You have to make an effort, like, when you're doing your beautiful mind shit, to still be present. I know you live under a rock, but you don't live under a rock so much the fact that you do keep in touch with people, right? Like, we've kept in touch throughout this journey. And I probably like one of the last people on your list to keep in touch with, but you always kept me in the loop. You know, I was part of some early testing. I did some survey stuff for your team, right? And like, you made sure to keep those people around you or in your circles so that you never were isolated. I think that's really hard for many entrepreneurs to do, because they go, I'm going to go build this and I'm going to go in a hole and build it, versus I'm going to go build this and get as much input and then how to manage those relationships. And I think the hot take there is, if you're a founder and you're finding that it is lonely, you need to look in the mirror and start looking at, well, who are you talking to? Who are you hanging out with? Who do you have as your champions? Do you need to get champions? Do you need to go get mentorship?
Yes.
Because without those things, I don't know if Iambic would ever be what it is today. Right. Without having the right mentors and champions in your corner. And that's really amazing. I'm really excited to see what's going to happen with Iambic and how it's going to change. And I know you've got some really cool events. So I would love to give you a chance to shout out what you got coming up. What's, you know, I know depending on when this episode airs, this might happen, but let's talk about it. You're about to launch your first brand video. You've got some really cool things coming up. So this is your chance to talk Iambic up. What can listeners expect? What should we be paying attention to if we're going to start following your journey and the company's journey?
Well, next month we will be finally launching. It's pretty big. We're going to finally have a full website. I know it's been a long time coming now. And we're going to be opening up pre-orders for our executive experience. So this year, we are rolling out a program that's almost like iambosphere, which is what you've been part of, Rob. And thank you so much, by the way, for taking all of the little interviews and surveys, because those are really big for us. But we actually see the executive experience as like the VIP paid version of iambosphere, where it's people who want to be part of our first rollout and get kind of the white glove service and all of the attention on them, their needs, their perspectives on shoes, what makes them tick, what doesn't. And if they could design iambics the way that they could, how would they make their iambics? We're going to be rolling out only about 600 pairs over the next year. And that's because we really want to get to know every single one of our earliest customers. I don't even want to call them customers, because I really want, I see them as part of the mission and in building iambic still. But people are going to have the option of actually coming to a studio in New York City for the white glove in-person fitting, where you get scanned with the Artec Space Spider, which is actually a scanner that NASA uses on the International Space Station. And we've actually, it's pretty cool. And we actually get to walk you through how we developed our technology, because that was one of the pieces of equipment we used to develop our smartphone scanner, which is part of the virtual consultation. After that, they get what we call the pilot shoe, which is a test pair. So they get to draw on their iambics and show where does it feel super great. And if it's a little bit loose or a little bit tight in these other places, let's, you know, firm that up a little bit, right? And so it's one way of making sure that there's a conversation about the shoe, because it can be so easy to say, oh, it's good enough, because good enough is not what we're going for. And then they get their final pair of iambics. And so we call it the executive experience, not just because there's like a VIP element to it, but also because we want people to feel like they're in control. Like there's this element of collaboration, co-creation that's always been part of, I guess, me as an entrepreneur and our team. And I think it's just so important to preserve that for anyone who puts our shoes on their feet for the next year. And then we're going to be rolling out a different version of the shoe the following year. And that's going to be focused on a fully virtual remote experience using our smartphone scanner, which we built with the NSF funds. And we're going to really be incorporating all the insights and feedback from our executive experience customers to that Model T, which is named after Tyson. So
well, that's exciting. And you know, this is all happening, you know, April into May, as we're April kicking things May. Off here in 2023, which is really exciting. So those that are listening, you know, when this drops, be on the lookout for what iambics doing in the journey. Quick question. The ones there with the red, you know, I love it. Are you going to do custom colorways? And if so, I need like the bottom of that shoe to like be like three tone brand colors. Is that possible at some point to do some custom colorway brand shoes?
Because we are taking requests, and this is part of the iambosphere / executive experience program.
So I'm going to be with my audience at some point. They'll hear my announcement coming up soon, but I'm going to be working on some really cool stuff coming up and doing a lot of interviews and podcasting and trade shows, and I'm gonna be on my feet a lot, and I'm gonna want a good pair of shoes, but I want a pair of shoes that is gonna be on brand with my outfits, and I have like the right colorways. And so that'd be freaking a hot take right there, and a hot topic to be like, what shoes are those? And like being at these big ass conferences and tech conferences and trade shows showing this off. So we should talk about that online, and I could be a walking billboard for you this year. And of course, you know, once you get everything launched, I'm excited to come down. I don't care if I'm part of the executive experience or not. I'm going to come down. I want to check out the technology in the showroom. And also, we haven't had a chance to meet in real life. Like I've been in ships passing the night whenever one of us is in New York at an event, the other one's not. So we'll have to make that happen. But I'm really excited, Maeve, to see what happens for the launch of the Model T, for all the work that Tyson and your team put in, and to get to, you know, recognize him and the champion that he was for the brand. And also just to see, you know, I followed your journey from back when this was like the data tech company to now seeing it as an unlikely fashion founder, and to see you start to come out of your shell with your own personal development, your own personal brand, your content. I know that's been
you and I talked a lot about that. How we met was through a personal brand workshop at the Get Shit Done Accelerator. And it was a struggle for you. And we talked a lot about that. So I'm excited to see all these things happen for you and follow your journey. So with that being said, how can Bear Nation follow along? Where should they be following? Website, social handles? Where do we follow along so that we can follow yours and the company's journey as you finally launch and take this and make an amazing thing helpful to so many?
Iambic.co, which is where you'll be able to sign up for our newsletter for fun updates, but also pre-orders for our executive experience, the waitlist for our Model T. We Are Iambic is our handle across Instagram, TikTok, Twitter, and then my first name, last name for Instagram, and then first name underscore last name on TikTok, because apparently there's another Maeve Wang who already took the version without the underscore, I discovered. So
we'll make sure to have all those things linked in the show notes so you can click on them, find them, follow on the socials. Maeve, I appreciate you for being a part, for being so, you know, real and raw and honest with us. I know it's not easy to share some of the things that you did, but we're excited as Bear Nation to see the Model T and the brand video and all those things kind of come live and really, you know, get to put all the time, energy, and effort, not only Tyson, but you yourself as the founder and leading the ship, to your co-founder, to your partners, to everyone that has put a lot of time and energy from 2020 to 2023 as we launch. You know, it's the first of many steps in your success, but, you know, one that I hope you get to celebrate and take a moment to reflect on how far you've come, because just as an outsider watching, it's been fucking amazing to watch you grow and see that. So I just want to say congrats and thank you so much for letting me be part of the journey by doing this podcast and being a part of Bear Nation.
Oh, thanks, Rob. And thank you for being part of our journey and continuing to be part of Iambisphere. And don't worry, the executive experience already actually has a pre-orders or wait list. And so I already put you on it. So we're set. Yeah.
Oh, I appreciate that, Maeve. And thank you so much. Follow Maeve. Check out Iambic. It's an amazing company. Going to be doing a lot of really cool stuff in the future. Bear Nation, as always, thank you so much for tuning in. Until next time, stay well and rise up.
Bear Nation, thanks for listening to the Bear Necessities of Entrepreneurship. If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe and leave us a review.